You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Now, the Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Here's your host, Dave Baum.
Hello and welcome back. Nice to have you with us again. The Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com. Got a great show for you today. The airline industry. I'll give you 10 seconds to calm down. And once you're calmed down, when we complete our conversation with the airline industry, we're taking a famous television series one step beyond. It was called Sex in the City. We're taking it beyond Sex in the City. We're going to call it Sex in the State. And in some cases, Sex in Washington, D.C., Sex in the Federal Government. You know what that's all about. I'll call it the Spitzer Syndrome. That's the second hour of the Baum Show today. And there's always room for you to call in. Our number on the Baum Show is 1-888-463-6748. That's a toll-free number. We are heard in over 85 countries and 2,500 cities across the globe, and we appreciate it. And thank you for telling your friends about the show on TalkZone.com. Once again, 1-888-463-6748. It's toll-free. Once upon a time, my friends, we all looked with anticipation to flying from point A to point B. Those times have changed. Thanks to so many factors, including deregulation, flying for the most part has become a dread. Getting to the airport, checking in, security, leaving on time, catching a second or third plane, overbooking, surly airline airport personnel and flight attendants, lost luggage, canceled flights for no apparent reason. The list goes on and on. And sadly, no apparent signs of getting better. As a matter of fact, getting worse. Pick up your local newspaper and you're going to read headlines that say, airlines lightening the load, tightening their belts. Let me give you three. United, reducing its fleet by 15 to 20 aircraft by the end of the year. Planning to raise $100 million from a recent $25 second bag fee for non-elite, get that, non-elite customers. Delta, cutting 15 to 20 mainline aircraft. Cutting domestic flying by 10% by August, eliminating 2,000 positions. Northwest, cutting the fleet by at least 40 planes this year. Pushing for a $50 hike in round-trip ticket prices along with other airlines. Now, they'll tell you it's just because of the skyrocketing price of jet fuel, but don't be fooled. There's other factors that began occurring long before jet fuel prices went out of sight in the last 2 months or so. Our guest on the Baum Show to begin this conversation, a multifaceted conversation about the airline industry, is David Armstrong. David is a San Francisco Bay Area journalist, columnist for Aviation.com, frequent flyer himself, covers airlines and airports from a consumer's perspective, and writes about places where you and I stay, travel, and spawn destination spots. David, welcome to the Dave Baum Show. Nice to have you with us today.
Nice to be here, Dave.
What is the state of the airline industry as we speak?
Well, I think that you did a very good job just now reeling off the litany of problems. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like there's any huge solution anytime soon. Certainly, the oil price spike is something that, as you rightly note, is sometimes used as an excuse. But at the same time, it's something very difficult for them to deal with. We do have some new nimble carriers, such as Virgin America and a few others, that actually seem to remember that the customer is king and have some concept of customer service, but there are really a lot of fronts in which the airline industry is going to have to scramble all jets to get things going in the right direction.
It makes me really wonder, David, whether or not, you know, that old saying is that size matters, if it really does matter in this industry, that bigness is not good anymore.
In a lot of ways, it's not, because with bigness sometimes comes slowness and rigidity and a kind of difficulty in changing to adapt to a fluid situation. So I think really a lot of the smaller carriers, that at least some of which have gotten pretty big, like Southwest, the low-cost carriers, the startups, are the ones that are offering some alternatives to the traveler and injecting some energy into it. But the big legacy carriers, Dave, they're really having a difficult time adjusting to the new world of aviation.
Well, how are they going to adjust? I know the question is not if, it seems to be when. Delta and Northwest, are they going to merge? Obviously, pilots of each airline have their own definition of how it should be done. So it seems to me to only be a matter of if. Is this what we're going to see? We're going to see the Deltas and the Northwests and the Uniteds and the Americans and whomever. Is that the future of commercial aviation?
I think it is. I think we are going to see some mergers, and we may see some before the end of this year, because I think that the airlines are hoping that with the Republican administration tending to be a little bit more pro-business, that antitrust concerns would not be as much of an issue if the Democrats get in and take the White House next year. At the same time, that will enable some of these big legacy carriers to pare down some routes where they're competing with each other. That'll help their financial bottom line, but I think that for the traveler, you really want someone to provide some competition for them. And again, I'm coming back to the same song, I suppose, but I think it's really some of the low-cost carriers and some of the startups that are going to make life a little bit more tolerable for people on the road.
So you're suggesting that maybe we have too many airlines today?
We have too many big airlines today for them to operate effectively. But again, I think that there are some niche carriers who can provide service, a regional service, maybe in some cases like all business jet service for people who can afford to go that route.
Uh-huh.
And also for people who can't afford that but want to take some of the short hops, let's say, to the sun and fun destinations, some of the smaller carriers and some of the low-cost carriers that are real successful.
But it's kind of amusing to me, large airports like San Francisco, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, Los Angeles, most of the big airlines control, I don't want to call them hubs, but they control basically the gates. And how are some of the smaller airlines that you're saying are in the process of becoming more effective, how are they going to become at least a little bigger players with respect to gates at O'Hare, Hartsfield, LAX? How do they do that?
Well, sometimes they buy them. Sometimes gates are up for sale. Sometimes they swap, or someone pulls out. This, for example, you mentioned some of the at the top of the show, some of the cutbacks that the major airlines are putting into effect. Sometimes if they cut enough flights, some of the gates become more available, and this creates some room for some of the other players. And if that happens, then we have a few more choices as consumer. It's not easy, and it doesn't happen all in one fell swoop, but there are some openings there.
Is consolidation, in your opinion, speaking for the consumer, is consolidation good or bad?
I think in the long run, it's not going to matter that much. It might be a little bit good. I know that we're all concerned about things like frequent flyer miles. I think that those will remain intact. If several of the big carriers merge, I think that they know they have to please their customers, at least to the extent of allowing them to keep their miles. Now, allowing them to use their miles is another issue, Dave. It's easier to accumulate them than it is to use them these days. But I think that, the smaller carriers will provide some fair competition. I don't think we're going to, have any worse situation. We might have a marginally better one.
Well, we see with respect to the frequent flyer miles, and you touched on it, some of the airlines finally are trying to get creative, aren't they, by trying to mix cash and miles together?
That's right, because they realize that people are accumulating huge amounts of miles. And, of course, you can do that in lots of different ways now, by the way you rent a car or where you stay in a hotel or that sort of thing. But then try.
And you can never use them when you want to.
Well, that's just it. You want to get on a certain flight. You want to go a certain time. You want to go to a certain place. And it's very, very difficult to do.
So the cash frequent flyer concept is, they'll pay you cash for giving up some of your miles?
No, it's not that. You have to pay them cash.
Oh.
And in a way, really,
shucks.
This contradicts the whole idea of miles. I mean, they're making it a little bit more flexible by saying you can use some miles and you can pay some money for this particular flight. So you're using a combination of miles and dollars. But, of course, the whole idea behind frequent flyer miles is that you don't use cash. So while the airlines are kind of spinning this as saying, well, we're making it easier for you, it's a little bit unclear on the concept, I'd say.
David Armstrong is our guest on the Dave Baum Show, San Francisco Bay Area journalist, columnist for aviation.com, frequent flyer, looking at it from the consumer standpoint. If you have any questions or comments, 1-888-463-6748. And as we said, that's a toll-free call on TalkZone.com. I've had the feeling over the years, as a flyer for personal and for business reasons, that what I thought were not necessarily perks, but the way it was done from the beginning, I'm losing more and more and more of that every day. I mean, there's a litany of things that obviously you know because you're an expert observer in this field, but the food, the snacks, the service, the smiles. Now down to the luggage thing. That could backfire on airlines, couldn't it?
I think it could because they're trying to squeeze out every dollar from the consumer every way they can. They have raised fares a lot, but they haven't raised them enough to carry all their costs, they don't think. And I think this really runs the risk of just nickel and diming travelers to death with all these extra fees, paying to check a second bag, buying a sandwich. Really, it's just not as much fun as it used to be. I know that as a traveler, I still love being in a new place, but getting there is not half the fun. As you rightly point out, it's getting more and more difficult. And yeah, it does run the risk of backfiring. But again, there might be some competition coming in from some European carriers, Dave, because we have a open skies agreement between the United States and the European Union going into effect at the end of this month. And this frees up European carriers, who generally do have better customer service standards, to fly anywhere they want to go in the United States, and gives reciprocal rights to U.S. carriers to go to Europe to fly to some of the places they couldn't go before because of treaty restrictions.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that, you know, competition, when the traveler begins to be on some of these airlines that do have good customer service, hopefully that'll raise the standard. If not, it gives people a choice, and they can book away from the airlines that aren't treating them well.
In other words, you will be able to book, let's use Chicago as an example, O'Hare, you'll be able to book for half of 2008, the second half, and thereon afterward. You'll be able to book, hypothetically, Lufthansa from Chicago to L.A., Iberia from Chicago to Miami. Is that the way it'll be? They'll not only have...
Yeah, if they're coming in from Europe.
They have to originate in Europe.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
Okay, so they originate in Europe, but then they will have the flexibility to fly in the United States?
Correct.
Oh. And the effect that that will have, you think?
Well, it provides a bit more service options for people than they had before. Not as many for domestic flights as for transatlantic flights, but at least if you're flying, let's say you use the example of Lufthansa, so let's stay with that because mm-hmm. I've flown with them a few times, and they do have good customer service. So in the past, if you wanted to fly from Chicago to, let's say, a secondary city in Germany, let's say Dusseldorf is a pretty interesting mid-sized city, you wouldn't be able to do it directly. It's certainly not an American carrier, but now you'll be able to go with Lufthansa, and they do have higher standards, so you get a bit more of an option there.
I'm thinking, getting back to the baggage issue, vacation's coming up. If there's a surcharge, more than like a dollar or so, let's say $25-$50 surcharge on baggage, if you got a family of four or five that's going on a vacation, and you're taking golf clubs and maybe some summer paraphernalia that you're not going to rent at the other end, you could get jabbed quite a few extra bucks, couldn't you?
That could be a lot of money. I mean, one thing people might consider in that circumstance is shipping things ahead. There are about half a dozen companies under various names. They actually put their gear on FedEx flights and UPS flights, but you know, or you could just use FedEx and UPS. Of course, that costs money too, but at least they're going to get there, and you're not going to lose them on the other end. I think for a family with a lot of luggage and a lot of gear, it's really going to be expensive, and it's going to be tough. For single travelers or business travelers, it's a bit easier. I mean, I try not to check luggage, and I sometimes travel alone, or I sometimes just travel with my wife, and we don't, fortunately, in our case, have that much stuff. So we pack light, and we just carry on as much as you can, following the old an ounce of prevention is worth a pound mm-hmm. of cure rule. That does help. Or ship it ahead.
If we roll the tape back, where did everything start going wrong? Because there was a day You can remember it. I can remember it. Just about every one of our listeners across the globe can remember. There was a day when flying was a very positive experience. Going to the airport, getting on a plane, and the experience has totally, almost totally collapsed. Where did this all begin, David?
Well, flying has become mass transit. And it didn't used to be. It used to be more of a special privilege. It cost a lot more money. Not as many people flew. And I think to some extent it's crowd control. I mean, you really just have a lot more people flying than in the past. Also, until 1978, as you'll recall, Dave, flying was heavily regulated in the United States and abroad. And I think there were some standards, and maybe a little bit more standards that were adhered to than that are being adhered to now. One thing deregulation did do is it made flying more accessible. It made flying cheaper by historical standards. Airfares are actually quite low right now. But I think that the quality of the experience has definitely declined. And I think that our infrastructure has not kept pace. I mean, you look at our airports. They're overburdened. They've been built out in stages. A lot of it seems to be improvised. Some of the countries overseas have built entirely new airports in recent years that are state-of-the-art and have been planned for many more people than are using them now so that they can get ready as air traffic continues to grow. I'm thinking of Hong Kong, Shanghai. These places have built entirely new airports, and that's not been the case so much.
Well, what was this industry thinking, not only domestically but internationally? Case in point, I read with interest recently that finally British Air laid down the money to build a terminal unique to itself at Heathrow that most normal-thinking people don't want to fly into because it's awful. Now, it seems to me that this was a relatively recent thing because the special terminal of British Air has or will be opening soon, but what kind of foresight or lack of foresight is there in this industry?
Well, I think it's a cumbersome industry, Dave, and I do think there is sometimes some lack of foresight. Otherwise, if you have really big infrastructure developments like a new airport or a new terminal, I think particularly in the developed countries of the West, it takes a really long time to build these things, in part because people are very concerned now about the environmental issues. A lot of people who live near airports, I guess you could say, should be expect them to be noisy, but nevertheless don't like the fact that there's lots of noise. So you're facing lots of environmental lawsuits, lots of reviews. They're very, very expensive. They become political issues. The new terminal at Heathrow that you're referring to, from the beginning of planning and to the fact to when it opens officially next week.
Uh-huh.
It's something like 15 years.
15 years?
It took longer than any major public works policy in the history of the United Kingdom just to build one terminal. Whereas there's not as much red tape, for better or worse, in some of the places like China or Hong Kong or Kuala Lumpur and Malaysia, where they just decide, hey, let's do it. But again, the citizenry doesn't have as much say, so it's, you know, there's a trade-off there, too.
With David Armstrong on the Dave Baum Show, as we continue our conversation about the airline industry, when we return, we'll get to the phones. I also want to ask David about leadership in this industry today. There's a perception that many have, including me, that once upon a time, there were the Howard Hughes-esque people in the aviation business who had great plans, sometimes had to be scaled back, as opposed to today, bankers and financiers who are bottom line only. We'll ask him for his opinion after these.